Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the In Layman's Terms podcast. I'm News Channel 5 sports anchor and voice of Belmont basketball, Steve Layman. Glad to have you with us here on today's installment of the program. And I am fired up because we are going to chat with Pure Sweat Basketball CEO Drew Hanlon, who has become the premier NBA skills development coach out there today. And of course, he's a former Belmont Bruin. We talked to Drew about being the man, as one of the star players in the state of Missouri as a high school basketball player, his decision to come to Belmont and play for Coach Bird, and some of those teams he was on, because he was a part of some of the best teams in Belmont history, specifically that 2011 team that he was such a star on. We talk about how tight he and his Belmont teammates were and how he built his business model really from the ground up, starting back when he was in high school with summer camps. And now here he is, the coach of the stars. He got a big break by training with David Lee one summer. And now today he coaches Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid, Bradley Beal, 9 of the top 36 scorers in the NBA. We talk about Drew's process with his clients, his advice for business students and aspiring entrepreneurs, and we talk about his advice for basketball players as well. It's a fun episode, so make sure you stick around. We hope you like the episode, and make sure you subscribe too for future episodes. So now, without any further ado, our chat with former Belmont star and NBA skill development coach, Drew Hanlon. Well, Drew Hanlon, good to see you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, no doubt. I know we've been trying to make this happen for a while, so I'm glad we finally got to do it.
All right, well, for those people who don't know, and I don't know how they can't know at this point, you're the CEO of Pure Sweat Basketball. Just tell me a little bit about Pure Sweat and what you're doing right now.
Yeah, the easiest way that I always describe it is, I basically individually train a dozen NBA players year-round, which means I'm in charge of their off-season training programs. During the season, I'm in charge of all their video work, so their pregame scouting reports, their postgame kind of video reviews where I'm doing voiceovers and talking them through what they could have done better. And then obviously there's a ton of other things I do as far as camps and clinics and seminars for coaches, players, trainers all over the world. But, my bread and butter is helping some of the best basketball players in the world get better. Joel Embiid leading the NBA in scoring. Jason Tatum, I think he's third right now in scoring. Both those guys are battling in the MVP race. Guys like Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine and Tyrese Haliburton and Tyler Hero, RJ Barrett, just list goes on and on. But it's been very fun. It's something I started doing when I was in high school, started working with NBA players when I was at Belmont, and now have just taken it to another level. And it's really fun to see, all the hard work of all these players pay off just because I've been with some of my clients for so long now.
Well, there's so many things I want to get to out of that, Drew, but first, what you just said there, kind of the in-between game or post-game report to these guys. What exactly does that look like? And how much is what you're doing, I'm sure, on the individual basis, how much does it have to match up with the coach's philosophy and all that, those sort of things? How challenging is that to go from guy to guy, night to night?
Yeah, it's not actually as challenging. It's a ton of work, but it's not as challenging just because I know these guys, on and off the court so well. We've built such, a rapport. There's so much trust there that I know what they're going through on and off the court. I know where they want to get to, on the court. And then my job is to basically be the GPS that gets them there. That's what I always tell people. I'm like the GPS. Like, they tell me where they want to get to, and I basically have to do a thorough audit and find out where they are. And then I have to put together a detailed roadmap to get them where they want as quickly as possible. And so, for some guys, it's making little adjustments. Maybe a team starts double teaming them a certain way and gives them a little problem. And I have to go back and find other people that have been double teamed like that in the past and find the solutions that they had for those problems. Or sometimes it's just making little in-game tweaks. You'll see somebody, sitting on a certain move, and you say, okay, well, here's the counter if they do this and if they do that. But really, it's just giving them a bunch of solutions for problems that could happen during the game, so that when those, situations arise, they're prepared for them.
Do you view yourself as a skill development savant or more of like an X's and O's guy, if that question makes sense?
Yeah, I would say there's three components to it. I would say the biggest one is actually neither you didn't name. The biggest one is kind of like the mental side of everything. You know, the guy that's pumping in confidence with, you know, with everything that we do, the guy that's there for them on off nights. You know, you see me around my clients when they're struggling more than you see when they're rolling. When they're rolling, there's times where I'll be like, hey, I don't need to come in town. You're rolling. Like, let's, you know, keep rolling. Like, I don't want to get in your head. I don't want you thinking about anything. You know, and then when they're not rolling, that's when you see me pop into town and make sure that we make adjustments and correct everything. You know, there was a notable one this year. RJ Barrett started out and he could not make a shot at the beginning of the season. And, you know, we went up, we made an elbow change where his elbow was way too far tucked in. We moved it out, which is an adjustment that we had to make in years past. And, you know, in the last, I think like 25 games since the change, he's shooting like 40% from three, averaging like 24 points a game. Whereas beforehand he was averaging like 17 a game, shooting like 20% from three. So that's what you're doing. You're really making those little tweaks. You know, there's been things like Joel Embiid has documented, like the adjustments we've made because of the playoffs. You know, he's been able to average 30 and 12 rebounds for a playoff series, but they haven't been able to advance to the, you know, finals, win a championship. And so we have to go back and study, what did the great big guys do ever since the rule change in 2002? You know, in 2002, they changed up the double teaming and allowed zone defenses. And there hasn't been a big that's really dominated one championship since then. And so we go back and we watch Dirk Nowitzki in that magical run that he had. And we saw that, you know, there were a lot of times where he isolated from the elbow and the nail, you know, in the middle of the floor for people that maybe don't know those terminologies. And so then we had to start working and shifting gears and spending a lot of time working from that position on the floor instead of, you know, the traditional post up spots that you would see a 7 foot, 285 pound guy go to. So that's all it is. It's, you know, it's mechanical adjustments. It's, you know, X's and O's adjustments, like you'd said. And then it is the skill development aspect of prioritizing what they need to work on most so that they can get to that next level. But those are three levels: the mental side, the X's and O's side, and then the skill development side.
Well, when these guys have the success that they've seen under tutelage, it's obviously why they would pay attention. I want to back up, though, kind of to the beginning, because this is not a new adventure for you by any means. Have you always been someone interested in coaching, teaching, skill development, those sort of things? Or, you know, I think about you started in high school. Most guys at that point that are playing like you were are thinking, I want to be in the NBA, or I want to get to college and have my school paid for. And you were already, I guess, one step ahead. How did that all begin?
Yeah. I mean, I was one of those kids that, you know, I really was able to combine two things that I love. I love helping people, which was the number one thing. And I love basketball. And so I was like, you know, how are ways that I can help people and be around the game of basketball? And, you know, I was a serial entrepreneur when I was younger. I was one of those people that was like cutting grasses and shoveling snow. And I remember back in the day when you used to be able to like download music, I'd make CDs and sell them to all my classmates. So I was one of those like serial entrepreneurs. And so when I got in high school, I started to have a lot of success. I was player of the year in Missouri. You know, I won a state championship. I was doing all these things as an undersized guard. And so there were a lot of people around town that were like, hey, what are you doing? Because we have undersized, you know, sons or daughters that would like to play college basketball like you're getting ready to do. And so I put together a drill book. It's called Drew Hanlon's Driveway Dedication. It was basically saying, hey, all you need is a dedication to the game of basketball and a driveway. Like, you don't need a fancy gym. You don't need a fancy trainer. All you got to do is just like put in the work. And I put together all these drills that I used to do as a young player that worked for me. It wasn't like there was nothing scientific about it. There was nothing that was like, I know these things work. It's just, hey, these worked for me and hopefully they work for you. And I went around and sold them out of my backpack, out of the back of my car. I was driving to tournaments, camps, clinics. And, you know, I ended up selling 5,000 copies that summer. So wow. Here I am in high school, you know, making $100,000 selling books. And I was like, I'm onto something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of money for a high school, you know, student athlete to be making. But really, I fell in love with the training side just because I saw the guys that I was working with get such great results. You know, like one of them was Brad Beal. Brad Beal, as a freshman in high school, I think he averaged like 8 points a game. And we actually worked out together. That's part of the story that a lot of people don't realize. When we first started training, he was working out with me because at the time I was actually better than him. You know, I was the best player in Missouri. He was just a, you know, freshman. And that's, I think his second game of his sophomore season, he scored 52 or 53 points. And everyone was like, what did you do all summer? Now, he had put in a ton of work. He had a great foundation already. His mom had taught him how to shoot from a young age. He, you know, grew a couple inches. He had lifted weights with his brother. But the one new variable was, you know, he started working out with me. And so, you know, Brad was fortunate. He was nice enough to give me a lot of credit for, hey, you know, Drew's helped me, you know, prepare to take my game to the next level. And then everybody else in St. Louis started saying, hey, we want you to do the same thing you did with Brad, transform our games. Then it became a lot of the best college basketball players. And then one local player, David Lee, gave me a chance my sophomore year at Belmont. He started working with me full time. And so my first ever NBA client was when I was, you know, 20 years old or whatever that is, you know, in an NBA All-Star. So it was just it kind of happened fast, but it was just every person that comes in the gym, try to get them better. Whether that's a player that's picking up the basketball for the first time, that's in third grade, or whether that's an NBA All-Star, pay attention to the details, identify what they need to work on, find the best solutions, you know, to help their problems. And if you get them results, the word of mouth is going to spread that you're the guy that can help out everybody. And so that's kind of the approach I took.
For those parents listening out there to this podcast, what are a couple tips from Drew's driveway dedication that they should know?
Honestly, it's funny because when I look back at it, there are a lot of good drills where I was like, you know, basketball, especially at the fundamental level, it's all about, you know, getting good habits, you know what I mean? Being able to finish the basketball, being able to shoot the basketball, being able to have a good handle on the basketball, all those things translate to every level. But the letter at the beginning of the book, I wrote a personalized letter. And I think that was the most impactful thing that came from that book. It was just me talking about my work ethic. You know, I used to shoot 1,000 shots before school every morning. I'd wake up at 4:59 a.m. and get to the gym and meet my high school principal, John Clark, there and do that. And then after school, I'd go back and do a skill routine. And I was doing it every single day, not just the days I felt like it, not just to post on social media, you know, that I was doing it. I was doing it because I wanted to play college basketball. And so I think that's the best thing the parents can do is understand that you can't drag your kid in the gym. You can't push your kid in the gym. It doesn't matter what trainer you sign on board to work with your kid. What really matters is helping your kid fall in love with the game of basketball. And if they love the game of basketball enough, they're going to want to improve. And if they have that burning desire to improve and they combine that with a good work ethic and then work on the right stuff, that's when they can actually get results. But I think it all starts with the love of the game. And it's fun. I mean, I have clients now that have, you know, sons that are growing up, and I have, you know, nieces and nephews. You know, now I have 4 nieces and nephews, and they're starting to get in the game. And first thing I do is I'm buying them all my clients' jerseys and just talking to them about basketball, or trying to get them to shoot 5 shots and just say, hey, let's make 5 before we go out and ride our bike. Like, just getting them in the habit of like loving the game. I think that's the first part that a lot of people miss. You know, I've had parents reach out to me and offer me boatloads of cash to work out their kids. And, you know, I'm like, do they love the game? And they're like, not yet, but that's why I need you. And I'm like, if they don't love the game, I'm telling you, like, you're just throwing money on fire, because, you know, they have to have that love. It has to come from within. Otherwise, they're going to hit some plateau eventually down the line and not going to be able to get past those struggles, not going to be able to get past those stresses, not going to be able to, you know, put in the work that's required to become a good basketball player.
Well, your love and passion for this, Drew, is obvious. When did Pure Sweat officially launch?
2007. So that was my junior year in high school. 2007 was when we started. It started with the book, and then it started with one basketball camp with my high school coach. And it was funny, NIL wasn't a thing back then. So I had to create the name Pure Sweat because I couldn't use my name to promote my own camp. So, yeah, you know, it couldn't be Drew Hanlon Basketball Camp back then. I couldn't even have my picture on the flyers. The first 5 years that I did any kind of camp or clinic, it just had to say Pure Sweat Basketball Camp. And people be like, well, who is Pure Sweat? And then we'd have to tell them on the phone or whatever, but no marketing material could include any pictures or images. So, you know, Heather Copeland there at Belmont, you know, saved me a lot of times, you know, kept me eligible and everything like that. But it did help me build the business side of things, which, you know, I look back and I'm thankful for, just because I was able to build a company that was a lot bigger than just myself.
I want to talk a little bit about your Belmont career, but great segue there, because a lot's changed since when you played with name, image, and likeness for athletes. Now, you talked about making 6 figures as a high school student with the book and the camp and some of that stuff. Can you imagine what Drew Hanlon's career would look like in an NIL era now?
Oh, I would have crushed it. I low-key did NIL before it was a thing, because I don't think I would have got a ton of the NIL sponsorship money that a lot of people would have, you know, that's what they think of when they think of NIL. They think of all these brand deals and making money. And usually those are for people at those high major schools that also have a huge social media following. But I think that I would have just been allowed to do my business a lot more flexible. I would have been able to do it a lot more fluidly. So I think that's the biggest thing that would have changed. I would have had more camps, more clinics, more, you know, business opportunities. But it really all been self-created. I don't think it would have been as much NIL related as much as just me allowed to do business, you know, as an entrepreneur. But no, I would have definitely included my teammates. We would have had some fun. We'd have had we would have definitely done well with the open availability that the current landscape allows.
You mentioned Heather and all the work she did to make sure you were on the straight and narrow along this process. And I know Coach Bird and the staff were involved too. Was it ever a distraction to be so involved in what you were doing away from Belmont basketball to what you were trying to do as the point guard of Belmont basketball?
It really wasn't. It was funny because I had that conversation with Coach Bird when I started training David Lee my sophomore year. I remember Coach Bird and I having a conversation. He brought me in his office and he said, "Hey, don't forget, your basketball career is the most important career right now that you're like working on." And, you know, he's like, I am all for you doing all these great things in the basketball world. I'm all for you building your career beyond just, you know, a basketball player. He's like, we'll support you in any endeavors that you're doing. He's like, but just make sure that you don't let these moments pass you by, because one day you will regret it if you don't take full advantage of it. And that was such great advice, because I did see myself transitioning from player to trainer, and almost I gave up that NBA dream because I was so locked in on being the NBA trainer. And you know, it's one of those things when I look back, I always wonder, I'm like, man, if I would have given myself more of an opportunity to pursue the NBA, would have things have changed? You know, would I have, you know, you look at, like, I joke around because TJ McConnell's a friend of mine, but I'm like, man, I'm like, TJ, I look at you every time and I'm like, man, I could have done what you did. Like, you chose defense. I was more of an offensive specialist than a defensive specialist. But I'm like, in the modern day NBA, I shot 48% from three my senior year. Was all first team all conference. I'm like, I would have gotten to another level. Like, could I have even sniffed out a chance? But things obviously worked out. But I would just say that the message that Coach Bird always had was, as long as you're putting in all the required work to make sure that you're becoming the best basketball player for our team, we're okay with what you do in your off time. I just chose to work on my business instead of play Call of Duty or, you know, all the other things that normal college athletes do.
Do you have any, this is a weird question because you've been so successful at what you've done, but do you have any regret about the way your playing career ended because of everything you just said?
No, I would say that I have two wonders. I wouldn't say regrets at all, because I wouldn't trade places with anybody. I would say the first wonder is, you know, when I was younger in high school, you know, I tell this story, Isaiah Thomas, the current Isaiah Thomas, not the OG Isaiah Thomas that played for the Pistons, but the current Isaiah Thomas that played for the Celtics and a bunch of other NBA teams. I remember when he was a freshman in high school and we were at an AAU event down in Vegas, and he was flirting with a friend of mine that was a girl. And I remember him, like, basically saying, like, I'm going to the NBA. And I remember her coming back and was like, "Hey, I met one of your, you know, the guys that you play against." And he said he's going to the NBA. And at the time he was like, I don't know, 5'4" maybe. And I was like, he's just spitting game. He's just trying to, like, you know, convince you that he's going to be this, whatever. I was like, he's too small to play in the NBA. And I remember that conversation, because then when he was in the NBA, we played him, Belmont played at UW. We played at Washington and we played against him, and we've become friends. I've done some training sessions with him and stuff like that. And I remember telling him that story, and I was like, he had this internal confidence that I didn't have, that he thought it was possible that he could make the NBA. Whereas I shut that off. Like, when I was in high school, I was like, I'm too short. You know, the last, you know, 1990 was the last time under 6 foot white American was drafted the NBA. 1990. I was too logical. I was like, you know what? It's only happened once in my lifetime. Like, why would me be the one? And so I always wonder, like, if I never turned that off, if I had this belief that I could, like, really make it, how would that have changed things? And then the other thing that I always kind of, the what if, or maybe you could call this a regret, is my senior year at Belmont, you know, I shot 48.2% from three, which was great. But I was so obsessed with, like, making a high percentage of shots And I look back and I'm like, man, I wish I would have taken an extra 4 attempts, 5 attempts, 6 attempts a game. And even if I shot 40% instead of 48%, just like having even more of a fluorescent green light, I wonder like what I could have been like, you know what I mean? So like, I think I use that a lot with my clients now of like, don't worry, don't be a perfectionist. Perfectionism isn't possible. No, like the best shooter ever, Steph Curry, he misses 55% of his threes. And so I wish I'd had a little bit more of a mindset of like, you know, just like let it fly and like, don't be so obsessed with the percentages. As long as you're shooting a good percentage, it's a good shot for the team. And those are the two things that I always kind of like in my mind, wrap around and say, what if?
That's fascinating. You bring up the confidence that Isaiah had and that you don't think you had the same level of it, because in my couple interactions with you, you exude confidence in what you've done in your life and what you've been able to do with Pure Sweat for sure. And even talking to the coaching staff, that was one of the things they were like, Drew believed he could do anything he put his mind to on the court or off of it. Where did that come from? And I guess you think there's another level of that out there?
I do, because when it comes to basketball training, like my clients will tell you, anybody that's been around me, they're like, there's nobody more arrogant when you step on the court with Drew in a training session, because I believe that I can take guys' games to the next level. You know, I have 9 guys. I think there's 36 currently as we're recording this. There's 36 players in the NBA averaging 20 points a game, and 9 of them train with me. You know, then there's, you know, 2 of the top 3 MVP candidates right now. I've been training Jason since he was a freshman in high school, Joel since he was at Kansas. So, like, I know that I can get results. There's zero doubt. I think what I was referring to was there was a little bit of doubt that creeped in that I could make the NBA. Right. And, you know, in the training world, I don't have doubt. In the basketball playing world, there was some doubt. Like I can make college basketball. I can play college basketball. I can impact the game at a high level in college basketball. I can make shots at a high level. Like there was no doubt that I had, exuded confidence when it came to shooting and playing. But the perfectionism or the is it possible, that's where I was talking about there's another level. But no, I mean, I really do believe that so much of this comes down to confidence. You know, I constantly am challenging my guys in a ridiculous manner. You know, the other day, you know, last week, Joel Embiid played against Nikola Jokic, and that was a big MVP matchup. And Joel had 19 points at halftime. And 19 points. So he's on pace for 38 points. And at halftime, I'm over there going, come on, man, what are you doing? Like, let's go. You need to do this. Like, and everyone around me at the stands were like, you just told a guy that had 19 points at halftime that like he basically wasn't good enough in the first half. And he goes off and he finishes with 47 and 18. And I'm like, that's why. Because there's always another level. And so I think in the training world, in the business world, I have that. You know, I wake up, I attack each day. I know. Like I tell people all the time, like what I've done in the business world, I'm in the first quarter of, you know, a preseason game as far as my business career goes. And they're like, no way, you've done so much already. I'm like, no, I'm just getting started. Whereas in the basketball world, I felt like once I got to high school, I win the state championship, we go to some NCAA tournaments. I just always felt like after college, I'm done playing. So I put an ending point. I put a period where there should have been a comma. You know, that's the best way to put it.
To kind of wrap up your Belmont choice and selection a little bit, you were the best player in Missouri. You were a state champion there. You're preparing to go to college. You always knew you were going to play in college. How did Belmont attract you? How did you make your decision to go there?
So it's a crazy story because Belmont came in late, actually. You know, I was getting recruited by a bunch of different schools, and I hadn't really decided where I wanted to go. I really wanted to focus on just – the whole kind of AAU Nike circuit at the time. And I was like, I'm just going to do the best I can. And at the end of the recruiting period, that's when I'm going to sit down, look at the offers I have, start, you know, narrowing it down, making visits and go from there. And so at Nike Peach Jam, I had a really good week there and Belmont, you know, had reached out. And the first time Coach Bird called, I didn't even call back. I had never heard of Belmont. And which was weird because I was such an NCAA lover and, you know, Belmont had been in the tournament to my sophomore and my junior year in high school. They had been in the tournament, but they were like the 15 seed that, you know, got blown out. No one really took them serious. And so they called me. I didn't even return their call. And I remember Coach Bird called me again and left another voicemail. And he just was talking about things that were different than everybody else, as far as like, it wasn't just like, hey, we want you. It was more of like, hey, we think that you can change the locker room, the way that you're a leader, the way that your work ethic, you know, we've done. He just did so much background on me as a person. And it wasn't just me as a player. And so I remember calling him back. We had that conversation. And I was like, you know what? I started doing my research. I saw their entrepreneurship program was one of the top entrepreneurship and business schools in the country. And like I said, I mean, I already had the bigger picture of like, you know, the basketball is going to stop bouncing at some point. I want to be prepared for the next 40 years, not just have a fun 4 years. And so they checked off all the boxes. And so I decided to take a visit. And that's when I was like, I'm going. Like, I remember I drove up with my mom on my visit, and we looked at the campus. Campus was beautiful. But the thing that won me over was the people, you know, not just the players. The culture there is just, I mean, I've been blessed to be around a lot of high major, great programs because, you know, I've trained some of the best college basketball players over the last decade. There is not a better program as far as culture goes than Belmont. There isn't. And the coaching staff was so supportive. Then you go to people like, you know, like Betty B-Dub, you know, who was doing all the mission trips that I was able to go on. You go to Jeff Cornwall, who did all the entrepreneurship program. It was just everybody. There was just a kind of everybody was for each person individually. And that's was so surprising. I was like, how does it feel like there's 20 people that are just supporting me, but they're also supporting everybody else too? You know, you just felt like you were so at home. And so that won me over. I took one more visit. And then after that, I was like, you know what? I don't want to mess this up. Like, I know where I want to be. I want to be at Belmont. I committed. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made.
And if you're a student of the game, Coach Bird, not a bad guy to learn from.
Oh, I mean, it's just, it's crazy too, how when I first started meeting NBA coaches, you know, this is, you know, 12, you know, years ago back, you know, right when I was getting out of college, and I would be like, oh yeah, they'd be like, where did you play at? And I was like, Belmont. And sometimes I wasn't sure if they knew what Belmont was or not at that time. You know, now Belmont's obviously everybody knows him, but I was like, you know, oh, I played at Belmont. And the first thing they'd say, oh man, great program. Coach Bird, such an X's and O's genius or offensive guru. And I was like, wow, like they really respect Coach Bird. And I remember like, I always appreciated him because I knew he was one of the winningest coaches. I knew how great of a person he was. I knew how much he cared about us. But like, I think after like 5 years after Belmont, I realized how respected he truly was in the basketball circle of like the biggest, brightest basketball minds in the world. And, you know, it's amazing. Even I've had people even say stuff about Casey's like play calling and stuff. And they'll be like, oh man, we stole a concept, a backdoor play from Casey. Like, you know, it's amazing that these NBA guys do pay attention to, you know, what Belmont's doing. And it makes me, you know, proud to be a part of it.
And I think about that 2011 team, because that was the first few months I'd moved to Nashville, actually, Drew. And I knew about Belmont and all the success before, but I hadn't seen it up close. And that team, you had, I think it was 11 guys who played more than 10 minutes. You were pressing up and down the court the full time, led the nation in turnovers, I think, and scored margin. I mean, that was one of the more, of all the winning teams Belmont had, that was one of the more fun teams to watch. What was just going through that year like for you?
Yeah, I mean, we were 30-5 that year. We had some close losses too. Like we lost at Vanderbilt by 4. We lost at Tennessee by 1, I think twice that year. Like we lost so many close games. Like, and then we just ran through our conference. I think our average margin of victory in our conference was like 24 points a game that year. It was something ridiculous. It was us and then Jay Williams and Eldon Brand's Duke team. Like those were the two teams that like had the most winning, biggest margin of victory in college basketball history. But the thing that stood out to me was we loved playing with each other. We literally had almost two units. Like it would be like first unit, second unit. And we just had such good chemistry. Everybody was sharing the ball. Everybody had a fluorescent green light. It was just so fun to be a part of. And it was, no one cared about anything individual. It was all team, team, team. You know, like after a game, there would be a guy that had a bad game, but we won and they'd be happy. Whereas that doesn't happen a lot of times in college basketball. A lot of times if you have a good game and your team loses, you're like, ah, we lost, but I did well. And if your team wins and you play bad, you're like, damn, like I played bad tonight. It wasn't like that at all. It was like win, 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 win. That's all we cared about. And we were all each other's best friends. Like when I talked about the culture of Belmont, that's the thing that like still stands out to me is like, you know, we're all still great friends. Like I'm still in group text with, you know, some of my college teammates. Like it's that big of a brotherhood slash bond, you know, but it's just memories and things like that that are going to last a lifetime. But that 2011 team was so fun just because we guarded like crazy. We shared the rock better than anything. And we played together as a unit. I mean, the bench was active, you know, scouting reports, we were so locked in. I got a cool story about the 2012 season, which translates because we had so many returners from that 2011 season. But in 2012, we played Georgetown in the NCAA tournament. And we had a week before to scout them. And so we knew everything. Like we knew their entire offense. And so Otto Porter, you know, the year after he got drafted by the Washington Wizards, and Brad Beal is obviously one of my longtime clients, my first ever client. And so I see Otto and I'm like, what's up, man, Drew? He's like, yeah, I remember you. You know, we just played you last year. I was like, okay, I didn't know if you know, you remembered or not from one game. You know, we play a lot of games. And he's like, yo, he's like, I'll never forget during the game, there was a play call and he had messed it up. And I was guarding Otto. That's who my scout was, just because they were so big that year. And that happened to be their shooting guard. And he goes, and you told me, like, you're like, yo, you're supposed to clear out. And I cleared out. And I was like, man, Belmont knows our plays better than we know our plays. Like, and I remember laughing at that because he did. He was like sitting there and it was Otto, Brad, and I. And he goes, yo, he goes, I got a funny story. He goes, Drew had to help me remember one of our play calls during the game, but that's how well they had scouted us. So that just tells you how detailed Coach Bird was and kind of what Belmont was all about.
So back to Pure Sweat. What's a typical day for you like now?
Typical day, it really depends on if I have two basically seasons. I have in season and off season. Off season, you know, it's in the gym 6 a.m. to 3 p.m., then maybe get lunch. First meal of the day comes around 3 or 4, then probably go back in and do night workouts. Then break down film and prepare for film edits for the next day, or review workout footage so that I can, you know, make the adjustments that we need. So it's a all day process where usually if I have one meal, I'm feeling good. If I, you know, don't eat a meal, it's not uncommon. During the season, I'm kind of on call. So in the morning I wake up, I do all the pregame, I do all the film edits from the previous night. So I'll watch all the minutes of my clients. I go through, I do video edits where basically I do voiceovers. I'm talking them through. I'm saying, hey, right here, you should have done this. Hey, make sure here you got to move this way. And I'm talking them through these voice edits. So I send those to my guys so they have them when they wake up or before you know, their practices that day, which normally happen between like 10 to noon. So I have to get up early just to get those edits out. And then most of the time I'm just with a client. So, you know, one guy will call me and say, hey, I got a big game coming up, a big matchup coming up. Hey, I struggled against this team last time. Can you come in and let's get some work in? Hey, my shot's not feeling great. My handles aren't feeling great. I'm trying to make a little run for all-star voting or trying to make an all NBA or MVP, you know, push. And then I'm just on a flight and doing that. There's days where, you know, I'll be like, tell my family like, oh man, I finally get to come home and see you guys in St. Louis. I'm so excited. And then my mom will be like, she'll be like, I just looked at your Instagram and it says wheels up to, you know, Philadelphia or wheels up to Miami. Or I'm like, yeah, I got called in. I'll see you guys next week. Like, you know, so that's all it is I'm on call. Whenever guys need me, I'm there. And other than that, I'm just doing a ton of film stuff during the year.
You've got all these A-list guys now, MVP candidates. You got 9 guys on the scoring list at the moment. How do you go about who you can work with at this point or who you want to work with as you get connected with these guys? And how much bigger can you get? I mean, that's a lot of guys to keep up with. How many more can you take on at this point?
You can't. You know, I turn down NBA All-Stars all the time, you know, just because you can't do a good job. You can spread yourself too thin. The thing that has worked for me in my career is I'm super detailed. I'm super personal. I'm super available. And trust me, there's some NBA All-Stars that everyone in my circle, when they hear that I turned them down, they're like, oh, no way you didn't. No way you didn't. And I'm like, yeah, because for me, it's about developing, not acquiring. I like developing guys. I don't like acquiring guys. So it's fun. Like I had Kevin Durant all summer this summer. That's fun to work with one of the best basketball players ever. But for me, I take more pride in helping somebody like a Tyrese Haliburton go from where he was to hopefully tomorrow we'll hear his name called in the All-Star lineup. You know, that to me is the fun part about it. So it's really cool because, you know, from the top players, I'm learning just as much as they're learning from me. Like one of the biggest blessings I have is that I have all these top players that I'm teaching, but I'm also learning from. And so it might be something where Joel Embiid gets doubled a certain way. And then now Jason Tatum is in that role. And so I'm going, hey, one thing I learned from Joel is this. Or it might be a young big guy coming in the league and they're like, all right, how do you shot block? Well, I don't know. I had like maybe two career shot blocks in my whole life. You know, and it's not like you can go watch film and say, oh, well, just be more athletic. No, there's actually a science to blocking shots. And in the NBA, there's a 3-second defensive, you know, call. So you have to be able to 2-9 is what they call it, 2.9 seconds in the lane. You have to be able to tag, which means like touch somebody and get back and get in and out of the lane. And when you're moving towards the ball and when you're moving away from there's a science behind it. And I can go to Joel and say, hey, I got a young big guy like Chet Holmgren, who's one of the guys I'm working with. He wants to get better at blocking shots. Talk to me. Like, what are some of the things that helped you when you were coming up? And so being able to pick the brains of some of the best basketball minds in the world is great. But as you said, you have to keep your core group small just because you want to do a good job with them. And you know, I take just as much pride in year 11 of a guy's career as I do in year one of a guy's career. And I've told my guy, every single one of my players, I'm like, hey, if there's ever a time where you feel like there's a trainer that can do a better job with you, we'll still stay friends. I want you to leave, but keep putting the pressure on me to do those little things that earned your trust in the beginning. Keep making sure I'm doing those same things, you know, throughout your entire career.
And all the training has now helped you add public speaker to your repertoire at this point. How much do you enjoy getting out there and talking to people? And what's the general message?
Yeah, so it's been fun. You know, last like 4 or 5 years, I've been doing a ton of keynotes for businesses. I've also been doing what I do on the basketball side for basketball players as far as working, you know, year round with them. I've been doing that with CEOs of big time corporations as well. What I realized was basketball is such a small niche in the whole world. And so I wanted to be able to expand and help as many people as I can. And so speaking was the first step in that. And then the second step is I just wrote a book that'll be out sometime during the playoffs. We haven't really have a launch date yet, a release date yet. But, you know, I just wrote a book as well. That's a self-help book that has nothing to do with basketball. There's some cool basketball stories where I use kind of, you know, parallels and kind of, you know, showcase kind of real world lessons that I've learned. But for me, it was just, again, it came down to like, how can you help as many people as possible? And I realized that basketball players, what I'm really doing is I'm giving them confidence to do the things that they need to do in games, but also helping them off the court. And I'm like, man, that's life. Everybody needs the confidence to do what they need to do in life and business and sports and, you know, whatever. And I think the overall message is the best can always get better. There's always another level. And, you know, for me, success is internal peace. I've been around some of the biggest celebrities in the world and had to help them through some of the most depressing times in the world. And I've seen some of the, you know, less fortunate people in the world where they don't have any materialistic things be the happiest people in the world when I've went on mission trips with Belmont or when I've done some of my own charity work. And so what I really learned over the last, you know, 2 decades of working with some of the best, you know, biggest celebrities in the world is that like success is inner peace. And so that's what I want to do. I want to help as many people find inner peace where they wake up loving their lives. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. You know, if you can wake up with a smile, go to sleep with a smile, you know, feel like you're a good person, know you're a good person, have a good close circle of friends and be able to provide the life that you want to live. You know, I think that's the ultimate win. And so that's what it's all about. I just want to help shrink the gap between where people are and where they want to be, whether that's a basketball player, whether that's a businessman, or whether that's just, you know, somebody that just wants to kind of feel more alive. And that's what phase two of my career is going to be about.
Good advice there. Having a positive attitude, loving what you do, and always be willing to work to get a little bit better wherever you are in life is really good advice. Do you have a name for the book yet? And where will people be able to find it when it comes out?
Yeah, it's called stop BSing yourself. You know, that's what I'm all about. I'm like, you know, I just think that it's all about winning the internal battles in our head and in our hearts. You know, and I think there's a constant battle. You know, the days you don't feel like working out as an athlete, the days where you feel like getting mad at somebody that cuts you off as just a regular, you know, driver. You know, that there's so many little things that happen in the course of our day, and each of those little decisions builds up to a bigger life. And so that's what it's about. It's about winning the battles within your own heads and hearts that ultimately dictate the outcome of the life you're going to live. And so it'll be out everywhere. You know, it'll be out everywhere, assigned with a big publisher. It'll do a whole book tour. It'll be a lot of fun, but it's going to be another thing that I can leave behind for people to kind of see the blueprint that's helped so many people out, you know, on and off the court.
Well, we all have our battles, so that's good advice, because we all, no matter what walk in life, you can always get a little bit better and strive to move forward in things. Drew, I feel like I'm fired up just listening to you talk. I feel like we could talk all afternoon and still hit on a bunch of more topics, but I know your time is precious, so I appreciate that. I do have three questions that I want to finish with that I ask everybody who comes on the podcast, because they're not particular to any one person, but I think they further illustrate who the person is. So kind of rapid fire here. If you didn't become Drew Hanlon, CEO of Pure Sweat and basketball trainer to the stars, what would you be doing?
Man, I think about that all the time, because I look back and I had a senior project at Belmont in the entrepreneurship program. And I created this technology that was basically like what Twitter was, you know, back then, like for like, you know, these sports hubs. And I look at these companies, I'm going, man, these companies are getting $1 billion evaluations. And like, I had some of these great ideas early on that like, I would definitely be doing something in the tech world, like tech world, you know, connecting. The thing that I always look back at though is, the one thing that the tech world wouldn't do is I feel like I could make a ton of money, but it wouldn't fulfill me in the aspect of like my burning desires to help people. And so that's the only thing is like, I could cheat and say phase two of my career is what I would do if I wasn't a basketball trainer. But like, I guess if I couldn't help people, it would be in the tech world, but it's just, that's what my biggest passion is just helping people. And if I did do the tech thing, I'd make, you know, I'd have a big sell. And then I would use that money to help people. Like, that's just what I love doing. I love putting smiles on people's faces. So it'd be, in some world, it would be make a lot of money in the business world and then give it back to the people that need it and figure out ways to help out.
I'd say you made the right decision, combining your two biggest passions of helping people and basketball, and you've done a great job. So second question is, what inspires you? What makes you wake up every morning to get those edits going and to get down to business and continue to build Pure Sweat and your brand and help your clients as much as you have?
One word, results. Results. That's what inspires me. And results aren't just on the court. Results are, you know, there's been clients that have been, you know, went through, you know, little battles of depression and then seeing them filled with happiness. You know, results are seeing a business, you know, a businessman that spends no time with his family, me being able to help him figure out, rearrange his business practices, rearrange his priorities, and then him being there at his son's softball, you know, baseball game, being at his daughter's softball game, you know, being able to just the results. People finally, my dad, I took him to Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Gatorade was one of my big sponsors. They gave him this jacket that wouldn't zip up. He was too fat. It's too big, you know? And I said, hey, I'm going to give you a challenge. Like, let's see if we can get that jacket to zip up by doing these couple things. And in one calendar year, he lost 90 pounds. That's results. Like that's what inspires me, is like helping people get the results that they want. And so, you know, that's what it's all about too. It's all about results. And so that's what inspires me. It motivates me to see people shrink the gaps between where they are and where they want to be.
Great stuff. And then the last one is, I guess it falls into kind of a guilty pleasure category, but when you get those results, I don't know if that's the end of the season, if Joel wins MVP or one of your guys maybe wins a title, or maybe it's a week in the summer that you maybe get off and actually take a vacation for yourself or something. How do you sit back? You know, do you share a bottle of wine with one of those clients? Do you go to a beach somewhere and relax? How do you kick back and get away from it all for a brief moment?
That's the problem. I have no off switch. I have very few vices. Like I'm 33 years old. I've never tasted alcohol, not a sip. I've turned down $10,000 for one shot of alcohol. I'm that disciplined. No drugs, no smoking, no, like, it's just, I'm just wired, like, always on. And so I don't know. The hardest thing that I promise you, the one thing that keeps me up at night, the one thing that I haven't even come close to figuring out is, like, at what point do you, like, enjoy this? At what point do you slow down? At what point do you, like, just say, like, you know, enough is enough? And it's so hard because I'm constantly preaching, like, enough isn't enough. There's always another level. That's what my whole brand is built on. That's what my whole job is to do, is to take people to the next level. But yeah, I hope one day I can find a solution for that, because right now I haven't. I'm always on. And it's one of those things where, you know, it's, my friends will laugh because I'll meet somebody new and I'll start talking to them. And next thing you know, we're at business and I'm like helping them, you know, they're like, yo, you don't have to always help people. So I don't know. I just have such a passion for it. I really do. I just love seeing people smile. I love seeing people reach new heights. And I feel very blessed to be living the life that I live. Like the other day I had a really cool moment. I don't have many of these. Like, you know, I forget sometimes, like when I was younger, my birthday present was one ticket to an NBA game. And my Christmas present was the flight to the NBA game. So my birthday and Christmas present combined every year were basically, I got to go see a game. Now, that was the highlight of my everything. I had my year, my life at the time. Like I got to see Michael Jordan play once. I got to see the Kobe and Shaq play once. Like these are when I was coming up, I picked the biggest and best games, but I'd go to one game each year. Now, like I get paid to go to 55 NBA games a year. I'm sitting courtside and I'm talking to the best players. I work with the best player on most of the Eastern Conference teams, like the best player on, you know, the Nets, the Sixers, the Celtics, the Wizards, the Bulls, the Heat, like the best player on all those teams. Like I'm shaping an Eastern Conference, you know, through some of the work that we're doing together. But the one thing that always snaps me back is this, like the other day I'm sitting down and I'm probably like five rows off the court, but I'm behind the basket, like, you know, behind that, you know, area. And I remember sitting down and I'm like, I hate these seats because I like to be able to analyze the game. So I'd rather be 20 rows up where I can see everything than real close, but like have a weird angle for the far side court. And again, that's just me being spoiled because that's, you know, I'm just so used to it. And this lady and her, I don't know if it was a boyfriend or fiance or husband, they come down and sit next to me. And when the lady sits down, she puts her drink and she turns and gives this big hug and kiss to the guy that she was with. And she's like, oh my God, baby, I can't believe we're this close. I've never seen a game like this. She's like, we're normally up top. Like, oh my God, I was so excited even to sit up top, but like, this is unbelievable. And I'm over here going, 5 minutes ago, I was about to like text the GM and be like, is there any other seats in the arena? Because like, and I was like, it snapped me back and like, yo, you were a little kid at one point that like dreamt of being anywhere in this arena. You know what I mean? And so like those wake up calls to me are like the coolest moments, you know, or like, you know, randomly I was in Spain the other day and had somebody sprint like to catch me before I went through customs. And he's like out of breath. And he's like, Coach Drew, he's like, I've never met you before, but like I do all your training programs and just know that like you helped me get college scholarships over there. Like university is what they call it. University scholarships over there. Like those moments are just like the moments that make you just keep going. So when you say inspire and when you say like what makes you like turn off, for me, it's not turn off. Like if I go to a beach and try to relax, it's going to make me like go more crazy because my ideas are going to be flowing in my head. But it's those moments where you get to put a smile on somebody's face or when somebody tells you that you've impacted their life that you've never met or, you know, you have a chance that we did a Make-A-Wish the other day where we did some meet and greets on the court for somebody. Like those are the moments where you're like, man, like this is cool. Like the fact that you can impact lives, not just players' games, but impact lives. That to me is what the most relaxing, you know, time of my life is when you get those selfless moments where you really get to see other people just experience an out-of-body experience that, you know, for me, every once in a while, I take for granted.
Man, is that great perspective or what? Drew, maybe you don't need a guilty pleasure because it sure seems like you're enjoying this journey you're on. And man, has it been a journey with a lot of success. I appreciate all the time you've given us today. So fun to catch back up with you and talk a little Belmont hoops and your journey as well.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I feel, like I said, I feel, you know, it's such a blessing to be a part of the Belmont basketball family, to see how much the university's grown, you know, all the different programs that they've added educationally wise, all the buildings that they've built, you know, and just to see how much Belmont's grown, to go from, you know, when I was in the Atlantic Sun to the Ohio Valley to now the Missouri Valley, and to have success at every stop along the way. It's just been such a testament to all the people that, you know, are a part of it, from the presidents to the you know, the staff to the teachers, and to, you know, all the coaches that make these programs so fun to be a part of.
Well, Drew, great to talk to you. Be well. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. You too.